Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining this week is my favorite politician in New York State, Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. Mr. Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, welcome back.
Thank you. You got me blushing already, but I'm happy to be back, Alan.
Well, you're the best. Okay, so let's start with something I want to talk to you about. I know you've been working on this for a while. I know it was embargoed for a while. We've been trying to get it out of you, but now maybe you can tell us a little something about it, which is New Yorkers, the headline is, could lose $72 billion in reported state and local tax deductions under the Trump tax plan. What can you tell us?
Yeah, it's a report we're just putting out. This issue of the state and local tax deductibility is so critical to New Yorkers. We are a high-tax state, both with state and local taxes. It would be a form of double taxation if, in fact, we lose that deductibility. And one of the problems with what's being proposed in Washington is that, you know, they're big on outlines and headlines, but short on the details. So when they talk about raising the standard deduction in place of losing the deductibility of so many items, including state and local taxes, it's really not clear how high that would be, what would be the real impact when you look at all the different changes they're proposing. Suffice it to say, Alan, we've seen this picture before. When folks talk about tax reform, it usually means those on the highest end, the wealthiest benefit, and the working people in the middle class are the ones that end up paying more. And this particular proposed change would really target states like New York and Connecticut and California and Jersey. What a surprise. Blue states would be the ones that would suffer the most. So we put this out just to remind everybody of just how much to quantify those deductions from a New York perspective. We certainly hope our delegation in Washington, Republicans and Democrats, will push back very hard against this part of the president's proposal.
Well, now, I want to make sure that I heard you correctly, because I know what our headline will be. Comptroller DiNapoli says that Trump is just getting back at the states that didn't elect him in this plan. Is that right?
Well, you know, one could say it's pure coincidence, or one could say that it's not. You know, my guess is they looked at a lot of changes, and when they looked at this particular one, they said, well, look who it's really hitting. You know, suddenly this proposal moves to the top of the list. But, you know, Alan, even in blue New York, as you well know, and you've covered many times, we have a number of Republican members of Congress.
Yeah.
And many of them are in vulnerable districts, certainly competitive districts. I know when I travel across the state, even in traditionally strong Republican districts for Congress, you've got Democratic candidates coming out of the woodwork. People are really motivated, energized in the base after the election last year and what's been happening. Certainly, if you are in one of the more marginal seats, you have to be very concerned if this, in fact, would come to pass. So on Long Island, for instance, Peter King, you know, from Long Island where I live, he's been very clear. In fact, the other day he was saying people shouldn't contribute to the National Republican Party if this would, in fact, come to pass. So I think even Republicans, even in blue New York, are starting to wake up that this would be very, very hurtful.
And so people like John Faso in the 19th District, who is for the president's health care plan, but does seem to be kicking up his heels about this deduction of state and local taxes.
Yeah, well, and well, he should. And Alan, you know, you raise health care. When you add up the impact, if they would repeal or significantly amend the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, and the federal budget cuts that are being proposed, that would directly impact New York State and local governments. If you add on top of it disadvantaging our taxpayers with this double taxation if they would lose the deductibility of state and local taxes, you're talking about a triple whammy to hit New York State. So there's a lot for us to be very, very concerned about. People ask me, what's the greatest risk to New York State's budget or New York's economy? It's what's happening in Washington. So I guess in the short run, Alan, thank God they can't get their act together and that they can't seem to get anything done. But at some point, they are going to get something done, and it could very well be on this tax reform issue, and that's why you see the heightened debate. You know, you certainly saw, you just saw our governor and our senior senator standing together. As I mentioned, many of the Republicans now are speaking out. This is the issue of the moment.
So, as a guy who has a cloth in his hand and a crystal ball, wiping off that crystal ball, is this just one of those things that they put up as a sort of a red herring and then they negotiate over it? Or do you think this is deadly serious?
I think it's deadly serious. I think there are many, particularly on the Republican side, who have wanted this kind of a change for a long time. Am I predicting that it will in fact happen? No, because I do think there's been enough of an outrage being expressed, but it's not done yet. And so my preference would be they just take this off the table completely, and maybe that'll happen. What may also happen is they may amend, and they'll have different thresholds. It's always in the fine print, especially with tax law, that you have to look. I say keep it simple. Let's just take eliminating the deductibility of state and local taxes, SALT as the acronym now is. Just take the salt off the table, right? Yeah. That's what doctors say, right? No, less salt. So take this salt off the table.
Okay, let me switch topics if I can for a moment. You know, you're a hero right now. And one of the reasons you're a hero is that the stock market is doing extremely well. So you've got all of these investments, and that makes, you know, the controller, who is in charge of our money, look good. However, people keep whispering in my ear, get your money out of the market because it's going to correct. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, there's no doubt that the current rally has been longer and stronger than anybody, you know, had projected. You know, one of the longest on record. And we see even when there are crazy tweets that go out and, you know, possible Armageddon, you know, on a global basis with North Korea and so on, the markets just still seem to go up. In some ways, it defies explanation. I think part of it is the fact that U.S. equities are still the safest harbor for money, both domestically and money from foreign investors as well. We still see the low interest rate environment, so, you know, people aren't leaving their cash in the bank. So the stock market is a logical place to put money. My obvious hope is that if we do have a correction, and at some point I'm sure we will, it's nothing like what we went through in 08 and 09, where you saw a real collapse of the markets. I don't think that's going to happen, although I do worry if they water down the enhanced oversight, the federal oversight, part of Dodd-Frank and the other changes from the Obama era. If they continue to take those away, you know, we could see a return to risky behavior and a bigger correction than any of us would like to see. Yeah, but for now, Alan, the markets are strong, as you say. We have a big part of our portfolio in the stock market, particularly in U.S. stocks. So when the market does well, we do well. That's good news for our pensioners and certainly for the taxpayers who help to support those pensions. But how long it's going to last, we don't know. That's why we do not put all our eggs in one basket. We have limitations under New York law where we can put money, but we do have a big chunk still in fixed income. It's safe, even though it's not returning a big, a big investment return. And obviously, as we've talked about before on your show, we do some diversification with alternatives, real estate, private equity, real assets now as an emerging asset class. We have very little in hedge funds, and frankly, we are cutting back on the amount that we have there. But we have a balanced portfolio. We have a long-term horizon. I'm very confident that we're going to continue to be, as you know, we're among the best funded of all the state pension plans in the country. The Pew Center just ranked us number 3 out of 50 states. Yeah, well, that's, you know what? You read about Illinois, you read about Jersey, you read about states that are poor. Fund of Connecticut, a lot of their financial problems relate to the fact that they have this big pension unfunded liability. We don't have that problem in New York. So we're in good shape. We want to keep our promise to our public retirees and manage the fund in a way that understands that taxpayer interests have to be considered as well.
Well, I know, you know, you're the top financial guy in the state, so I have a question just between you and me. Forget about everybody else who's listening, and they have no stake in this. Should I call Tia Kreff and get my money out of there now?
Well, I'm not qualified to give that kind of advice. Fortunately, I have a lot of smart people that I hire, and we have good advisors. So I don't want to give you bad information. You know, follow your gut and your own point. Ask your wife; she'll know better what you should do.
I want to talk to you about a term you use because I don't understand what it is when you were talking about about all the things you have, investments in real estate and this and that.
Yeah.
And then you said real assets. What does that mean?
Yeah. So real assets would be infrastructure. Real assets would be agricultural land. Real assets would be timberland. It could be commodities like gold, but we don't do commodities, but it would be those kinds of investment opportunities. One of the big areas that we've been looking at is infrastructure. Obviously, it's a big buzzword, not just in New York or nationally, but frankly, globally. You have many developing countries where there are great opportunities for infrastructure investment. So that's a newer area for us in terms of investing. But, you know, again, in the spirit of diversifying, that's one of the areas that we've been looking to provide more opportunity for us to not be totally tied to what's happening with the stock market.
Okay, so Mr. Controller, Thomas P. DiNapoli, I have a question for you, my old friend. And that,
yes, sir.
And that is, if the president and his Republican colleagues pass this bill, and it worst comes to worst, how bad will it be for New York? Your headline is $72 billion. Put that in context of what our total state budget is.
Well, the total state budget, you know, around $155 billion. So again, that's accumulating.
About half.
The deductions that, well, it's so this is the amount that equates to the deductions that people take. So in terms of the individual taxpayer, it will vary, but it really creates a situation of double taxation. And let's keep in mind, when the income tax was put in place, you know, decades and decades ago, this was always considered something just in the course of doing business that you would be allowed to deduct state and local taxes. So, you know, this in a sense is double taxation. Well, you know, indirectly really put more pressure on our state and local budgets as well, because taxpayers will say, gee, I'm paying all these high taxes locally. I'm not getting the what has always been viewed as a sacrosanct part of the tax law, the ability to deduct it, you know, from my federal taxes. It really is just going to put a lot of pressure back home. And then, Alan, as I said earlier, if you add on top of that changes in health care, we've leveraged billions of dollars under the current structure on health care. If we lose that or significantly reduce it, if Medicaid is cut significantly.
Medicare, too.
Medicare. If it costs more, people won't have health care coverage. If they end up, you know, what happens if you don't have health care coverage?
Yeah.
You go to the emergency room as your doctor's office. And if you can't pay, we all end up paying for it through other ways anyway, whether it's through, you know, taxes or, you know, surcharges on insurance premiums. And federal budget cuts, you know, cut nutrition programs, housing programs, education. You add all that together, a state like New York, where we've finally had a stronger budget picture, we certainly have an economy generally recovering. We still have, you know, weaknesses in many of our upstate communities. All this could set us way back.
Right. Okay, so now, because time is fleeting, there's a question of the governor and a special session. So that guy's got to be up there, Andrew Cuomo, trembling that if, in fact, the budget is, as you suspect, under tremendous pressure. So does he call a special session in anticipation, or would that give aid and comfort to the president who is for all this stuff?
Well, it is a real possibility. I think some of this will depend on two immediate healthcare programs: the hospital fund, so called DSH funding for our public hospitals, and the CHIPS, the Child Health Program, you know, covering insurance for our youngest citizens. You know, those are programs that are really very much tied up in the current federal negotiations. Senator Schumer's indicated optimism that those will be resolved in a positive way for New York in terms of the payments flowing again. I think we need to wait and see what happens. We'll know that soon enough, but it is possible, you know, we could have a special session.
Well, but if you were the governor, come on now, Tom, just you and me, if you were the governor, and you may be governor someday, if I had my way, you would be. If you were the governor, would you call a special session just to protect yourself, to protect the people, or would you wait till it played out?
It's really about protecting the interest of the state. I think we probably need a little more information. I'd certainly be consulting right now with our legislative leaders to have them be ready, you know, to come. You know, here it is the end of October. You know, January, everybody's back anyway. It remains to be seen if it's necessary. But keep in mind, Alan, you have that provision in the state budget. If we lose $850 million or more in federal aid, within this budget year, there is the opportunity for the Division of Budget to come up with a plan to deal with that reduction, or the legislature to come up with their own plan. So if the worst starts to come to pass, you know, there'll be reasons why the legislature will want to be back to be part of how we respond to any big cutback in federal aid. And keep in mind, Al, another report we put out, a la the Moynihan report of past years, that gap between what New York sends to Washington versus what we get back, that gap is only growing in the negative. So that's another layer of the context of the challenge that we face in Washington right now.
Okay. One of the things that caught my eye that you've been dealing with is public drinking water. You're saying that we're in trouble here.
Well, we've done a number of audits. I mean, this is one of those infrastructure areas that really cries out for attention. We certainly know in the capital region, Hoosick Falls, the terrible situation there. Where I come from on Long Island, we depend on a sole source aquifer. There have been many contamination challenges over the years. So when we talk about infrastructure, sometimes people focus on, you know, the bridges and the roads, and that's very important, and the highways. But water infrastructure, drinking water, sewer infrastructure as well, this is very important to public health, very important to our opportunity for economic development. And we've found through our reports and audits, major shortfall in the funding available to deal with this. As you know, in this budget, they put more money at the state level to help localities, but we have a long way to go in this regard. We're going to need more help from Washington to deal with this issue. We also did audits of municipal water systems and found that, you know, frankly, they could do a little better job monitoring. We have where you do have older pipes and broken pipes and water loss. Very often, there's not been an adequate attention on monitoring that. It's a loss of revenue, a loss of the resource. So at the local level, we need to do a better job to protect our water supply. At the state and federal level, we need to come up with more money to get our water infrastructure in good repair, in safe repair as well.
Do you ever worry, Tom, this is just personal, do you ever worry about when you get older that you might face dementia?
Well, I think that's something that everybody has to worry about.
We see,
unfortunately,
I do.
Everybody's living longer, and you know, the incidence of Alzheimer's is real. I mean, I don't lose sleep over it yet, Alan, but I think we all need to be worried about our health, physical and mental.
The reason I ask that question, it's a sucker play here, a punch, is that I just read in the paper as we speak this morning that there's a famous study now, a large study, that shows that individuals who have blood thinners in their body, who take blood thinners, are much less likely to get dementia. Now, that means one more drug that is going to go on the market. Somebody's going to figure this one out. And some of these drug companies are, frankly, getting away with murder in terms of what they're charging and what Medicare and others are allowed to do with them. So do you have any sense of how volatile the relationship between the government and drug companies can be?
In this country, this has been one of the big issues I think has even had a bipartisan interest at times where the drug companies have an ability to, you know, under the guise of money going for research to come up with new products, you know, charge exorbitant amounts of money. It's very different. As we know, our neighbors to the north in Canada have a very different structure. This is an area, you know, obviously beyond what the state can pursue, well, certainly in terms of what our office does, but the ability of big pharma to influence our policy and reimbursements in a way that benefits them and disadvantages the everyday people of this country is an ongoing concern. This is the kind of issue they should be focusing on in Washington that they're not.
Now, you got a real interest in a new savings program for individuals with disabilities. It's called New York ABLE. What's that about?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. We have the 529 college savings plan that people are familiar with. You put money aside and you're able to save with tax benefits for loved ones that are going on to college. Well, the New York ABLE program is similar. It's actually called a 529A program, but it is geared to individuals with disabilities or if you have someone in your family. So either you as the individual can open the account or an account in your name can be opened where family members pay into it. And it provides that opportunity for savings, similar to college savings, although it's not exactly the same. You're allowed to have an annual contribution of up to $14,000. The account can go up to $100,000. And you are able to use the earnings and distributions from these accounts. They're provided on a tax-free basis if the money is used for disability expenses, for education, for health and wellness, transportation, housing. And the advantage is you don't lose the opportunity to still be qualified for federal benefits, SSI, you know, as an example of an important benefit. So it provides the opportunity for more dignity, more independence and living without jeopardizing your federal disability benefits. So it's a great program. It's modeled on a national statute that allowed it to happen. New York now is, I believe, the 28th state that is providing this opportunity. It's administered by the Comptroller's Office. Your listeners should go to our website if you are a person with a disability or you have a loved one with a disability, you want to open one of these accounts. Made it very easy for you to do it right online, and it really is a great new program.
Okay, so I want to go somewhere else because, look, let's say somebody in New York sees fraud being committed, and that's how you get informed. Obviously, they should report to you about this fraud. How do they do that? I mean, how do they get in touch with you, Tom DiNapoli?
Well, you know, the easiest way, based on how folks do it these days, is going to our website. So whatever their search engine is, you know, just Google New York State Comptroller, and you know, we have information there on an email that they could send. We have an Office of Investigations. They are ready, willing, and able to listen to any complaint, and we get complaints sometimes even anonymously. We track them down as best we can, but very often when we've been involved in these public integrity, public corruption cases, often it has started because a taxpayer, a citizen, has seen something they don't like and they contact our office. So snail mail, email, phone call, just go to our website. All of that contact information is readily available.
Well, you know, that's very interesting. We have a major political trial coming up in New York with the governor. Some of the closest people to the governor are on trial, and they could be in prison for many years, including one guy who is always described as his third brother or the third brother in the Cuomo family. And I'm wondering how that affects the comptroller's office, because there is a question of public confidence, right, in government when something like this comes down.
No, it affects everybody. Not, you know, anybody in elective office is hurt when someone either elected or appointed, certainly a high level official, comes under serious charges. We will see again next year potentially retrials. You know, of the Assembly and Senate leadership, depending on how those appeals go. You know, this what concerns me, Alan, is that it tends to turn people off to government, and they say, oh, everybody's no good, therefore I'm not going to vote, I'm not going to be involved. And that is a very dangerous dynamic. If anything, people should feel outraged. They should get more involved. We need more competition in our elections. I personally favor public financing of campaigns. That's how you can level a playing field. Certainly, as you've often pointed out, we need to have fair redistricting policies. Before you know it, we'll have another census and then have to draw the lines for the legislature. We need more competition. We need more people saying, I want to make sure that I'm looking closely at who's seeking office. And there's never a guarantee that someone, even someone good, is not going to do something bad at some point. But Lord knows we need more people running for office, more people making themselves available. That's how you get a better talent pool. And so that's why if you're mad about what you're reading or seeing, don't drop out, drop in, be involved, be engaged, and help us make this system work as it's intended to work.
I got a minute left, and that means you can't talk for more than a minute, and that is
okay.
And that is constitutional convention. Should the voters vote for one or not?
I will be voting no. I think it's going to be a lot of money that could be spent for better purposes. We have important protections in the current Constitution I don't want to see jeopardized. We have a method to amend the Constitution now. I don't think we need the convention. I will be voting no.
It's always a pleasure to talk to the great Thomas DiNapoli, an old friend and a guy who I have incredible trust in, who is a comptroller of the state of New York. Tom, you keep coming in to talk to us. I don't know why you do it, but you do it, and we're extremely grateful for your doing it.
I love talking to the great Alan Chartok.
Oh, boy.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.